The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We hear about the growth of cities that population centers, probably synonymous with cities, are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, that if the future is urban, that the future where people will be living, where most people live now, especially in the United States, are in these large cities. That at some point we need to come up with a different term than city, because a city now encompasses, that word now encompasses anything from a town maybe of 10,000 to Houston or Chicago or Los Angeles or New York, and they're very different entities in a lot of ways. How are they growing, and what in the world does it have to do with media coverage of religion? Terry Mattingly joins us. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So you recently wrote about an Axios story on the growth gap in American cities. What does this economic story, in essence, have to do with religion?
Well, it's not just a growth gap in terms of numbers. It's an economic story. And I was really honest in my post that I wrote about this at Get Religion. The story doesn't contain a single word of direct religious content. Yet, if you look at it and you start thinking of the impact of the economic figures in this story, the implications for religious groups and denominations across the country are just screamingly obvious. I mean, I would be stunned if some of these numbers are not tacked up in the home missions and church planting divisions of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and a lot of other groups that are interested in building new churches, because the technical and financial challenges of building church communities in intense urban areas are incredible. Yet at the same time, when we start thinking about the roles that certain major cities play in American life, you then begin to see the moral and the cultural implication of these numbers. I'll just read a couple. These are based on some Bureau of Economic Analysis things that the publication Axios put into one neat, easy-to-read story with a bunch of links to click on. This was the distribution of gross domestic product, and it showed New York City at $1.7 trillion, Los Angeles, $1 trillion, Dallas, $535 billion, I should say, Washington, $530 billion, San Francisco, $500 billion. Now, the point you made before that was excellent. I wonder if that San Francisco number takes into account the wider region of the Silicon Valley, because I would be tempted to think that if you looked at the regional area around San Francisco, the Silicon Valley numbers have got to be way up there, if not competing with Los Angeles. Then you get to all other metros get 38.2% of the gross domestic product, whereas the top 25 metro areas all add up to 52% of the gross national product. The non-metro areas of the United States get slightly under 10% of the gross domestic product. Now, when we start thinking about the names of those cities, and you start thinking of, well, there's the San Francisco area, there's LA, there's New York, there's Washington. I'm sure that somewhere up there, if you begin to take other factors into account, let's play along with me here for a second. What would you say are the six most influential cities in the United States if you went for shaping culture, politics, economics, and media?
Okay, in no particular order, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Atlanta. Am I up to five now? I have to pick a sixth. I would probably say Portland for a sixth, in no particular order.
I would radically disagree with you on some of those. First of all, everybody's going to concede you Washington and New York.
Yeah, I didn't mention D.C. I probably should have.
Yeah, I mean, D.C. obviously, to me, is number two, especially if you throw in media and the way that policies there shape a lot of these other things. So the four that I think everyone would agree on is New York, D.C., Silicon Valley, L.A. Now, when you pick the other two, you begin to get into debates about the others. You mentioned Chicago. Chicago definitely would have been true 20, 30 years ago. You mentioned Houston, and I think Houston is the underrated city in American life. Nobody ever stops and thinks about the economic and multicultural impact of Houston. I would still put Boston in the top six because of academia, Harvard, medicine, and a bunch of other things that filter into American culture big time. So now we're really talking about one other city in the United States. Maybe Dallas, but how does Dallas shape American culture? How much influence does Dallas have on what's in your newspapers, on your television, on the internet, etc.? So anyway, I don't want to get into a long debate here, but my point is, can we agree that the six cities that shape American life and culture the most are some of these cities? And that at the same time, when you begin to look at religion in American life, I frequently ask my students, and they all come up with students, and we always argue about number six. Atlanta doesn't do a lot to shape culture, although I think there are some movie studios that were going to be based there, Tyler Perry leaps to mind, that might contest that. But what's making the studios now not want to go to Atlanta?
Well, it's essentially a religious question from my perspective.
Exactly. From a doctrinal perspective as opposed to a political question. Do you remember all of those stories about Amazon trying to decide where to stick its next super headquarters?
Oh, yes.
What were some of the issues that came up and what cities were getting eliminated, like Nashville?
Well, yeah, they were moral questions, moral and religious questions that Amazon wanted to set up someplace that was going to be, what shall we say, progressive enough?
Progressive, sympathetic to the moral values of their company. Does that have anything to do with where a lot of these billions and trillions of dollars are going? Now, let me get really overtly theological here for a second, though, to see the challenge that this poses for church leaders. I have to admit, I'm putting my seminary professor hat back on today with this, just as much as journalism. Now, name the six most powerful cities in the biblical world of the New Testament.
In the biblical world, in first century Palestine?
Yeah. Well, no, not Palestine. the world of the New Testament, which is way bigger. Oh. Most of the New Testament occurs in Turkey.
Well, yes. Okay. So you've got, obviously, Rome.
Rome.
And if you're counting the Christian era, you got Alexandria, those two.
Exactly.
Constantinople.
Constantinople, which becomes Byzantium, etc. Although it doesn't really exist yet, but I think what we do is we say Greece gets one, and that eventually becomes Constantinople.
And
we're in agreement on those three.
You've got, by way of kind of historical heritage, you've got Athens is in there. It has to be counted just in terms of the intellectual capital.
Right.
And then I would say probably Jerusalem, of course.
Jerusalem. Now, you missed the big economic center that dominates so much of the New Testament, and that would be Antioch. Okay, where are the patriarchs of the ancient church located? Where are the centers of the New Testament church that develop into the patriarchs of the early church?
They're in those cities.
They're in those cities. So somehow the church thrived in the super cities of its day, was somewhere near the mechanisms of power, thought, economics, life, ideas, etc. So then where this gets fun with my students, I ask them to say, most of my students are from evangelical colleges, so I say, okay, now name for me the most powerful evangelical cities in America.
Evangelical cities.
Yes. We start with like Wheaton.
Colorado Springs.
Colorado Springs, the Wheaton of the West. I wish I had copyrighted that phrase.
Dallas.
Dallas is a great one to consider, yes.
I would probably put Houston in that, and I would put...
Not in terms of Christian institutions being based there.
Well, that's true. What else would you add?
Nashville, Orlando, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, because of the publishing houses and stuff. Okay, now what's my point? If you wanted to have a massive impact on American society, Nashville is the only one of those cities that immediately to me shapes as one that has anything to do with shaping the content of American culture. Wheaton is kind of near Chicago, but not mentally or emotionally, dare I say spiritually. If you were going to have a major impact on ideas and culture and entertainment and life in America, would you set up in Wheaton, Grand Rapids, Colorado Springs, Orlando? There's a lot of culture in Orlando, but they don't make any of it there. They just celebrate it and sell it to your children. It always depresses me that the number one tourism destination in the world is Orlando, a mosquito-infected, humid, hot swamp full of representations of TV characters and movie characters. My point here is you can see the implications of where the super cities are and where they're being supported and blown up and pushed. Now, there are some other interesting trends here. It's so expensive to live in some of these cities that some millennials are beginning to flee elsewhere. You may have noticed a story a couple of weeks ago about millennials fleeing to the South and trying to find places in the South that are hip enough for them or progressive enough or tolerant enough for them. And within this Axios piece is a fascinating discussion that if you look at economic growth in Texas, that all ends up in Austin, Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. Now, if you know anything about Texas and Texas politics, especially on moral, social, and cultural issues, where are the only places in Texas that are safe if you're a liberal on religious, moral, and cultural issues?
Well, Austin is the safest spot of all.
Austin, Houston, San Antonio, Dallas. In other words, even within some of our states, when you begin to analyze economic growth, corporations normally want to be, well, what Rod Dreher has started calling woke capitalism. W-O-K-E, capitalism. Woke corporations want to be places where they have sympathetic and feel they can work with the values of the local leaders. This has incredible implications both for religious groups, but then for the reporters that try to cover religion. Because we're going to see, you think tensions are going to be rising on moral and social issues in Houston and Dallas over the next decade or so? How about Atlanta? Nashville? These things are like Bunsen burners, and the cultural trends in our nation are cranking up the heat under them, which is one of the reasons why so many people want to misread Rodrier's Benedict Option as a book that is calling for everybody to run and go hide in the hills. Where are the hills? Well, far from economic growth, ideas, major universities, and all those dangerous things. Go run away to safety. That's actually not what Rod is talking about. He does paint pictures of a couple of communities, deliberate communities that are in such settings, but he's also looking, you know, in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And a lot of what inspired that book was occurring in places like Rome, Prague, Paris, you know, and these are not minor cities. Rod is very interested in alternative religious communities in which people are able to live explicitly faithful Christian religious lives in the context of major cities and in the context of wherever they find themselves, whether that was Prague or Waco, you know, for Pete's sake. In terms of other church issues, you get into some interesting things. When you hear conservative Christian people say, well, you know, I've been offered a, you know, my company wants me to consider moving to New York. What are some of the first things they mention?
Well, I mean, they feel like they're going to be, where am I going to go to church? Is there a suitable church for me in New York City? Are there churches in New York City? They might even be asking.
Well, of course there are. And in fact, New York is a very vital city in a lot of different church traditions. But church, doing church in New York and doing family and doing community in New York, all kinds of things fit in. Cost of living. What if you wanted to have a larger family, which in New York is anything more than one child? I mean, although, you know, just a couple of generations ago, parts of New York had massive Italian families and Greek families and Jewish families. And now the Orthodox Jews of Brooklyn and other parts are among the, you know, the large family traditions of the city. But you immediately start having to ask questions about practical life, cost, some of the things we talk about here on the show so much, things like birth rate. Am I going to be surrounded by a community in which I have a chance to raise my children the way I feel they should be raised? And a lot of people associate that with a hostile climate in what? Big liberal cities, right? As if that culture has not been atomized and is now being streamed directly into the smartphones in your children's pockets.
I'm curious about this, Terry. The term flyover country has certain unspoken connotations to mm-hmm. it. Political irrelevancy, less educated, not as urbane, culturally perhaps stagnant, if not mm-hmm. anachronistic. Has it now in America, that term flyover country, taken on a religious connotation too?
Oh, certainly. You look at depictions of that part of the country in most of our popular culture. Let me back away for a second and reframe your statement a different way. If you were living in England over the last 5 to 10 years, would you say there have been any political and cultural implications and tensions between the thriving major urban areas and the rest of England?
Brexit.
There's a name for it. If you looked, remember the famous zip code maps in the Bush-Gore election? And people have been doing them ever since. I mean, everybody wants to do a map of the states. The states is not as relevant. What's relevant are the area codes or the zip codes. And the minute you see this, you begin to realize that American politics and our battles over moral and social issues have increasingly boiled down to major urban areas and college towns versus everywhere else. Does that have any implications for religious groups? Does that have any implications for ministry? Yet when people hear, oh, Mattingly's trying to tell us to all move out to the hills of Tennessee like he did, you know, or whatever, however they want to look at that. Remember my illustration about the New Testament church. The New Testament church found a way to thrive eventually at a high cost in Antioch, Alexandria, what would become Constantinople, Rome. Are we saying that the major cities of America, when push comes to shove, are more hostile to the Christian faith than Rome of the New Testament era? Antioch? Alexandria? Now, those grew to become major centers. And now, of course, in our era, the church once again, for reasons that have to do with geopolitics and economics and a lot of other things, and frankly, in Rome, the decline of the Roman Catholic Church in terms of the percentage of its members that are active participants. You can't run away from the importance of big cities. You can't run away from the fact that Augustine wrote the city of God, not the suburbs of God. We do not have some ability to run away from the trends, the stories, the themes, and the realities that shape our culture and thus shape the culture that's going to end up affecting our churches and our children, whether we want it to or not. We don't have an ability to run away from it. So numbers like these economic figures, I think, should just slap religious leaders in the face and tell them, look, folks, here's some reality for you. Meanwhile, reporters that are covering religion in the United States have to be able to look at these tensions as well. Something big in American culture, something bigger than this, what even the circular firing squads we're involved in right now in American politics. Something's coming between the heartland and the urban cities of America, the big cities, the super cities of America. There are stories coming. There are tensions coming. There are trends coming. There are shocking elections coming, as if the last one wasn't shocking enough. But what was the economic and cultural realities behind the election of Trump? Where did Trump win most of his victories? And what were the regions of American life that opposed him the most fiercely? What we're going to need eventually, I think, some American version of the word Brexit, because it's the tensions are not going to go away. And we're a Supreme Court decision or two away from the nation almost giving up on concepts of tolerance and moving even more actively into social engineering, which is going to create a lot of stories and a lot of conflict. And this dynamic is going to be at the heart of many of them.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss restoring American values with Tim Gagline. It's This Week in Pop Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough, and we'll play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.